following is a fictional story of events that may happen in your future. 8 a.m. New York Stock Exchange. It's a cold, breezy day on Wall Street. As markets await the Federal Reserve's announcement for QE4, futures are up significantly. The Dow Jones just breached its 2008 high of 14,164. Gold just hit an all-time high of 2,900. Silver just breached $100 per ounce. The dollar index is holding at 53. With official unemployment at 16.3%, there's a nervous feeling on Wall Street that if this doesn't work, the world could implode into a depression that will last for the remainder of the decade. 8:19 a.m., Beijing. Chinese officials announced they can no longer allow Washington to devalue their holding. After making their concerns private, China accepts that Washington will never stop paying its debt with inflated currency. China makes an official statement from Beijing. Quote, "We have made our concerns known privately for some time. With QE4 about to be announced today, China will have no choice but to stop purchasing U.S. treasuries. We have allowed Washington to try to work through their imbalances for 4 years. But with global inflation and U.S. consumers rapidly shrinking as a percentage of global GDP, we feel that a Western recovery is unlikely until they reform their entitlement programs." 8:45 a.m., New York Stock Exchange. Upon hearing the statement from China, Dow futures have a sharp reversal and begin to drop. Gold leaps past $3,000 per ounce, up $150 per ounce in the last 26 minutes. CNBC awaits a statement from the White House. 8:50 a.m., Washington, D.C. The president makes an official statement to calm investors' fears. He tells Americans that he has spoken with several G20 leaders. They have assured him that they will continue to increase their purchase of treasuries and believe that a strong U.S. economy is the only thing that will bring back global prosperity. He has also spoken to Chairman Bernanke, who assures him that a strong dollar will be the result of QE4. The president also reminds Americans that his recent New Deal recovery program that he passed through executive order will increase the likelihood of a lasting recovery. He also notes that Beijing, since 2009, has slowly been reducing their holdings, so the impact will be minimal. 9:51 a.m., New York. Dow futures fall 850 points in the first 20 minutes of trading. Markets are halted for 1 hour by the authorities. 10 a.m., Main Street, America. The news about the stock market in China has now spread. A panic begins to set in, and unprepared Americans rush to the grocery store. In an attempt to purchase food and water, Americans that didn't know what was going on are alerted by all of the news stories and panic buying. Within 50 minutes, there is a nationwide rush to the stores. Empty store shelves in America become a reality. 10:52 a.m., New York. Markets reopen and the Dow Jones resumes its collapse. Investors around the world join the sell-off in bonds and stocks and begin to purchase commodities. Unlike the panic of 2008, this time commodities are seen as the only safe haven from a dollar crisis. 11:30 a.m., New York. The Dow falls 1,700 points since reopening. Trading is halted for at least 2 hours. The Federal Reserve injects $200 billion into the market and announces that QE4 will be delayed until further notice. Congress is called back to D.C. for an emergency joint session. Some members of Congress are saying that they consider China's statement a financial attack. 12 p.m., Main Street, America. Several cities begin to see civil unrest after grocery stores are forced to close. Traffic in the streets and violence break out. The president puts the National Guard on alert for a possible deployment onto U.S. streets if things don't get under control soon. Several news agencies are reporting injuries at grocery chains and call for the authorities to do something before it gets worse. 12:15 p.m., Toronto, Canada. George Soros tells CNBC that a run on treasuries is imminent and that there is nothing the government can do to stop it. He says it is unfortunate that a controlled decline of the dollar was not coordinated better over the years. Today really could have been avoided if not for the Tea Party politicians who demanded fiscal responsibility and a constitutional government. 3 p.m., gold closes at $11.53 for the day at $4,053 per ounce. Silver closes at $173 per ounce. The president announces that due to civil unrest in some areas of the country, U.S. stock markets will remain closed for the rest of the day. With the exception of mining and other inflation-related stocks, the majority of U.S. stocks are down significantly due to the sell-off and flight to safety in commodities. The Federal Reserve announces that it will begin to purchase U.S. treasuries and stocks in order to stabilize the market. But this only feeds investors' fears of a full-blown treasury run and collapse of the dollar. 6 p.m., Asia. Asian markets begin a massive sell-off. Dollar collapse rumors begin to take hold of the market. CNBC Asia looks into a possible comic default and complete breakdown in the U.S. economy. Gold spikes in Asia, up 1750 in the first complete hour of trading. Gold is now at 5803. 7 p.m., gold and silver bullion dealers across the world have suspended all sales due to no inventory. A comic default is now expected. Several central bank representatives propose a freeze on currency markets and a fixed devaluation of the U.S. dollar in order to calm investors. 7:30 p.m., the United States. The sun sets on America. In the last 12 hours, the world has changed. Americans are glued to their televisions, taking a crash course on a debauched currency. Smoke from fires in the cities have put a dark cloud over the nation. 7:45, the Federal Reserve. The Federal Reserve announces it will inject $1.5 trillion into the market in order to stop any further decline in stocks. 7:55 p.m., OPEC. The final nail in the coffin. OPEC nations halt oil trades in U.S. dollars until further notice. They will only accept euros, renminbi, or gold. 7:59 p.m., the Federal Reserve's announcement to inject $1.5 trillion into the markets causes a sharp reversal in overseas markets. Stocks begin to rally even as Main Street melts down. 8 p.m., Manhattan. Gerard Adams, president of the National Inflation Association, sends out an urgent email alert. In it, he informs members that it is with great sadness that the time to warn and prepare Americans for hyperinflation has ended.
And that's how it'll look. That's how it'll happen. That's how you'll hear it. You're on with the C. Robert Jones Conservative Radio Report. The phone line, 347-884-8500. You just listened to The Day the Dollar Died. Now, I was watching Fox News earlier today. I was watching some Obama apologists talk about spending and investing. And, hey, forget about ideology. Let's just do what's best for the country, one of these morons said. Let's just do what's best for the country. What's best for the country? She called for a second stimulus. And there's word in Congress that Congress wants to put forth a second stimulus to stimulate the economy. Not that the first stimulus worked at all, because it did not. But now congressional leaders on the Democrat side want to put out a second stimulus. Let's just do what's best for the country, the Democrats say. The Democrats say today. They said today. Oh, by the way, today is June 10th. We're here in Washington, D.C., the planet Earth, third planet from the sun. I can look out my window and see the White House. Not that anybody would care about that. So it's all about a second stimulus, stimulating the economy in a different way. This time it'll work. It'll work this time. Oh, there's no doubt. It'll all work out just fine. Oh, wait. Antoinette is saying that she does not have sound. Oh, my goodness. She must be having some technical difficulties. I'm checking over here, Antoinette, to make sure everything's working out okay, and it looks like it is. Yeah, everything's working the way it's supposed to. All right. So here we have a situation where the Democrats want to try a stimulus again. But, hey, let's talk a little bit about some of the things we talked about yesterday. One of them is Obama's failed strategy. Because more and more Democrats, more and more of those political the political pundits who were so on Obama's bandwagon just a couple of years ago, just a couple of weeks ago, are now suggesting that he's incompetent. Do you see how that works? All it takes is that one person to say, the emperor has no clothes. The emperor's buck naked. And I've been saying it all along. But, of course, no one's listening to me. But when you have folks like Chuck Scarborough, when you have newspaper writers, Pulitzer Prize winners, all it took was one person to come out and suggest, one partisan, nonpartisan individual to come out and suggest that, no, to state outright that Obama is incompetent. And you all remember the story of the emperor with no clothes. Staring at the White House, listening to Fox News, I'd be popping Prozac. Yes, Richard Martin said it in the chat room just now. On March 2nd, President Barack Obama anointed for the third time Vice President Joe Biden as his lead negotiator on coming to an agreement with congressional conservatives on this year's federal budget. What's it going to take to get Obama to get off his lazy ass and go in and handle this himself in a nonpartisan way? Because earlier today on Fox News, I heard a woman say that the Republicans need to put away ideology and do what's best for the country and raise taxes to pay for a new stimulus. She just went on to prove that we have lost the war on drugs. Obviously, she was popping something. Why doesn't the President of the United States put away his socialist Marxist ideology and do what's best for the country? Get off his ass and stop phoning it in. Because that's what I'm talking about right now. The next week, wait a minute, Biden then spent half a day on Capitol Hill talking with Republicans before jetting off to Europe. The next week, Senator John Manchin, Democrat, West Virginia, attacked the president on the Senate floor. Thank you, Democrat. Why are we doing all this when the most powerful person in these negotiations, our president, has failed to lead this debate or offer a serious proposal for spending and cuts that he will be willing to fight for? But you know what? What Manchin doesn't seem to realize is that failure is Obama's plan, and I've been saying it for a while now. A lot of us have here on Blog Talk Radio. After an unprecedented two-year spending spree, President Obama is not looking to change Washington's bad habits anytime soon. Conservatives got the message in last November's election. The American people want them to take substantive steps towards scaling back an out-of-control government. House Republicans passed a seven-month continuing resolution to keep the government operating, and that cut $61 billion in spending and blocked funding for a host of terrible policies, including Obamacare. This is the first good step a modest step that Harry Reid and Obama are unwilling to take. The White House strategy is as clear as day, folks. It knows the American people do not currently trust President Obama on federal spending. Not only do 62% of Americans currently disapprove of President Obama's handling of the federal deficit, but for the first time in recent memory, more Americans say they prefer the approach of Republicans in Congress, 47%, on cutting programs to reduce the budget deficit and still maintain needed federal programs. The White House knows it has to improve these numbers before President Obama can negotiate short and long-term spending deals, deals that protect his big government spending priorities. So how's the White House planning to change these numbers? Two words, government shutdown. The plan goes like this, folks. It's almost brilliant in its stupidity. President Obama does nothing now and allows the existing continuing resolution to expire. The White House and its media allies then portray the resulting government shutdown as the end of Western civilization as we know it. Remember the TARP program? Americans' faith in the Republican approach on cutting programs to reduce the budget deficit and still maintain needed federal program tanks. President Obama then emerges as the centrist peacemaker, balancing the spendthrift congressional Democrats with the mean-spirited congressional Republicans spending cutters. President Obama's base then pretends they're offended at some very minor cuts. And that's the White House's plan. They want the shutdown to go ahead so that they can blame the Republicans for it. He's going to do nothing. He's just going to roll out. He's going to roll out, have a good time, play a little basketball, golf a little bit, maybe take another trip overseas at tremendous taxpayer expense. And that's it. The guy is butt-ass lazy. And he doesn't really, I'm sick of saying it. I won't even say it because I'm tired of saying it. But like an increasing number of Americans, I am sick and tired of the ineptitude of Barack Hussein Obama. I'm sick of his lies. I'm sick of his inability to do his job. I'm sick of his abandonment of virtually all the promises he issued with so much gusto during the 2008 election. And you who voted for him, you should be mad at yourselves forever, even for a cyber second, buying into the snake oil illusions of that morally corrupt, intellectually dishonest bastard of a president. As a president, Obama is a monumental failure. As a human being, he is devoid of morality, honesty, or ability to accept responsibilities for his actions. We have, to my mind, elected a psychopath, a sociopath, to the presidency of the United States. He's gotten just that bad. Obama is living proof that affirmative action can and does fail to work, even at the highest levels of government. What, in retrospect, what drove this nation to put such an inexperienced moron into the highest office in the land? Think about it. A first-term senator, a product of the Chicago Democrat machine. I am from Chicago, folks. What the hell was America thinking? It's true. I admit it. We didn't have much choice when it came to the presidential pool in 2008. When it came between choosing between Barack Obama or McCain, American voters felt like a Christian Scientist with appendicitis or something. But Obama could go down as one of the worst presidents in American history, an amateur, so incapable of handling the job that even my guy, George W. Bush, the man Obama blames for all his failures, comes out looking more like a capable president. Even Democrats privately call Obama an amateur. In the House and Senate chambers, they whisper and laugh at his many mistakes and realize that they, like so many others in America, were had by a con man. Nearly 3 years into his administration of mishap, missteps, mistakes, Obama continues to spout the very same tired verbal mantra that it's not his fault. George W. Bush did it all. I just inherited the mess. What kind of leader does that? What kind of leader of men blames his predecessor? Imagine, if you will, a young Marine officer gathering up a platoon of men, his first platoon, a platoon leader. He comes in and his platoon behaves shabbily. His platoon is a bunch of shitbirds. Instead of squaring them away and shaping them up, he goes to the company commander, the captain, and he says, "I can't get these men to do what I want. It's the fault of the previous platoon leader. It's not my fault." His ass would be sent packing. Packing. Administrative discharge right then and there. But we have a man, and I use this analogy because of the word leadership. Leader. Leader. George W. Bush did not expand the Afghan war into another Vietnam-style mess. George Bush did not orchestrate a budget-busting, lobbyist-crafted, phony health care reform bill that will do nothing to provide affordable medical care to Americans who need it most. Bush made a ton of mistakes. That much is obvious. And his administration put this nation into one hell of a mess. But Obama has done nothing to turn the country around. His inability to build the coalitions he promised as a candidate has deepened the gridlock in government and deepened the economic mess. Polls show that Americans no longer buy into Obama's "it's Bush's fault" whines. They want action, not excuses, and rightly so. They want a leader, not an equivocator. At this critical time, at this very critical time, folks, America needs a leader. And Barack Hussein Obama is not one. I see Richard Martin in the chat room. I see my good friend Karen Hunter in the chat room. She's going home tomorrow. That's very nice. Barack Hussein Obama is not a leader. He's just another political hack elected to a job he can't handle and was never qualified to do in the first place. And we're the idiots who continue to put these kinds of failures into office. That's what we do. Now, I'm not going to continue to defend George Bush, because one needs to pick one's fights carefully. And I'm pretty sure that this is one I can't win. I offer the following not as a defense of Bush or an attack of Obama. It is of interest more from the standpoint of what has happened to the notion of an objective press in the United States. If George W. Bush had been the first president to need a teleprompter installed to be able to get through a press conference, would you have laughed and said, this is more proof of how inept he is on his own and is really controlled by smarter men behind the scenes? Think about that for a moment. If George Bush had spent hundreds of thousands of dollars to take Laura Bush to a play in New York City, would you have approved? If George W. Bush had reduced your retirement plan's holding of GM stock by 90% and given the unions a majority stake in GM, would you have approved? If George W. Bush had made a joke at the expense of the Special Olympics, would you have approved? If George W. Bush had given Gordon Brown a set of inexpensive and even incorrectly formatted DVDs when Gordon Brown had given him a thoughtful and historically significant gift, would you have approved? If George W. Bush had given the Queen of England an iPod containing videos of his speeches, would you have thought this embarrassingly narcissistic and tacky? If George W. Bush had bowed, a deep bow, almost scraping the king's shoes, if George Bush had bowed so deeply to the king of Saudi Arabia, would you have approved? If George Bush had visited Austria and made references to the non-existent Austrian language, would you have brushed it off as a minor slip? Would you have approved? There is no Austrian language. But Obama is supposed to be a genius, the smartest man on the planet, or the smartest man in the room, only if he's in a room by himself and there are no chairs or a dog. If George W. Bush had stated that there were 57 states and that he visited them all except one or two because he had two more to go, would you have said that he is a moron? If George W. Bush would have flown all the way to Denmark at $252,000 per hour, that's what it takes to run Air Force One and everything that goes along with it, and that is according to the United States Air Force. If George W. Bush had flown all the way to Denmark to make a 5-minute speech about how the Olympics would benefit him walking out his front door in Texas, would you have thought he was a self-important, conceited, egotistical ass? Think that over for a minute. I see AC is in the house. If George W. Bush had been so Spanish illiterate as to refer to Chicano de Cuarto in front of the Mexican ambassador when it was on the 5th of May, Cinco de Mayo, and then continued to flub it when he tried again, would you have winced in embarrassment if George W. Bush had done that? If, because I got some more ifs here, if George W. Bush had misspelled the word advice, would you have hammered him for years, like Dan Quayle and potatoes, as proof of what a dunce he is? Even I, who can barely spell his own name, can spell advice the first time around. If George W. Bush had burned 9,000 gallons of jet fuel to go plant a single tree on Earth Day, would you have concluded that he is a moronic hypocrite? If George W. Bush's administration had okayed Air Force One flying low over millions of people, followed by a jet fighter in downtown Manhattan causing widespread panic, would you have wondered whether they actually got what happened on 9/11? Would you? I got a few more, but these are all things that your president has done, and yet we're being told that he is a brilliant man, that he's the smartest person in the room. If George W. Bush had failed to send relief aid to flood victims throughout the Midwest, with more people killed or made homeless than in New Orleans, would you want it made into a major ongoing political issue with claims of racism and incompetence? Maybe it's because all those Midwesterners are bitter and they cling to their guns and their religion. No, my dog is dumber than your dog, Karen, and smarter than Barack Obama. That's how dumb Obama is. If George W. Bush had created a position of 38 czars who report directly to him, bypassing the House and Senate on much of what is happening in America, would you have approved, or would you think that there might be a bit of a dictatorship happening or a shadow government in George Bush's White House? If George W. Bush had ordered the firing of the CEO of a major corporation, even though he had no constitutional authority to do so, would you have approved? If George W. Bush had proposed to double the national debt, which had taken more than two centuries to accumulate, in 1 year, would you have approved? And wrapping it all up right here and right now, if George W. Bush had taken over the healthcare industry, added 159 new agencies, with their added cost, with laws and regulations, as well as taxing you on your employer's provided health insurance, would you have approved? If George W. Bush had then proposed to double the debt again within 10 years, would you have approved? So tell me again, what is it about Obama that makes him so brilliant and impressive? Can you think of anything? Well, worry not. Dry your eyes. He's done all this in the 2 years he's been in office. And we're going to have another year and a half to come up with an answer. You know, either Americans are just plain dumb, we were desperate. We were desperate and we couldn't help ourselves. After all, George W. Bush was the worst president in history. So we had to do something, right? Only the intellectually elite could believe this man's positions. Obama is a dangerous fraud and an embarrassment. And what about Barack Obama's treatment of Israel? Israel's Prime Minister, Benjamin Netanyahu, rejected President Obama's call for Israel to pull back to the borders that existed before 1967. Why would Obama even suggest such a thing? Why does he continue to throw our allies under the bus? Stab them in the back. He has recently done just that with Great Britain. Again, Obama isn't just liberal. He is a failure. The ultimate failure. That's what he is. And I feel sorry for America right now. I feel sorry for me. I feel sorry for us all. And now Obama has lengthened that enemies list. Because now he's biased against all of Texas. I suppose he doesn't really need those electoral votes that Texas provides. Or maybe he's just arrogant enough to think that he'll get those votes anyway. Think about this, folks. Republicans coasted to victory in the midterms by painting President Obama as a liberal and running against him on ideological grounds. And that long looked to be the GOP's template for the 2012 elections as well. But Charles Krauthammer, one of my favorites, detects a significant shift, thanks in part to the weak economy. Suddenly, the election theme has changed. The Republican line in 2010 was, he's a leftist. Now it's, he's a failure. Finally, isn't it about time? Isn't it about time that America has come to the point where we can now say it? We can now actually say that the emperor is buck naked. The emperor is buck naked and we don't like what we see. Obama is incompetent. Check it out.
I'm Dr. Bradley Henenfent, a retired medical doctor and an economist. I'm here to tell you that Obama is the most incompetent president in history when it comes to health care or economic policy. Remember how Obama promised 8 times that healthcare reform would be televised on C-SPAN? Those were blatant lies. Remember how healthcare reform was passed against the will of the American people using a dirty trick called cloture? The problem with Obamacare is simple. It takes power away from patients, doctors, and nurses. It takes power away from people who need their lives saved. And it takes power away from the people who can save those lives. And it gives it to third parties who don't care about you. The problems with Obama's economic policies are also simple to explain. Obama has given us runaway debt and no jobs. Those who wanted hope and change can look forward to unemployment instead. Those who wanted a better future may instead have to slave away at a job they hate for their entire lives because Obama has taken opportunities away from everyone. Vote them all out. You can do your part by sharing this video with everyone you know.
I've done my part. Obama is an idiot, and he's incompetent. And I've shared that video at the request of the doctor. What can we do? What can we do? Well, we can talk about this idiot some more. Because I got to tell you something right now. Even, and I love it, because even Democrats are coming out saying that President Obama needs to stop with this ideological crap and start taking care of business. Even Democrats are saying that it's the economy, stupid. Democrat senators and congressmen are coming out and they're saying that President Obama needs to put all this silliness aside and do his job. Finally, could this possibly be the hope we need? When at this point we have Democrats who are saying that we need to stop all this ideological crap and do our jobs. I am impressed right now with some Democrats because finally there are Democrats out there who are getting it. There are Democrats out there, folks, who finally realize that Obama is running this country into the ground, and he isn't even involved. He's out on the links, or he's at the basketball court, or he's flying off somewhere making a fool of himself. I mean, finally. I am impressed. I'm finally starting to think that this guy may finally be brought to heel. Finally. Now, when you have House Republicans and Democrats saying that Barack Obama isn't doing his job, when you have them all saying that they do not agree with moving the borders in on Israel, when you have everyone, not everyone, no, because there are still some folks out there who are saying that this guy is God Almighty. But more and more Democrats, more and more Republicans, more and more political pundits, more and more newspaper men are coming out and women are coming out saying that this guy doesn't know what he's doing, that he's an utter failure. And Mitt Romney is finally coming into his own. Mitt Romney is finally starting to look presidential. Presidential. And so there may be hope yet. I wonder how many of you listening to this show are Mitt Romney supporters or Ron Paul supporters. Obama is, what I said earlier, an inexperienced moron who doesn't have the brains God gave a goose. And yet he's being touted as a genius. What a moron. His deficit plan, his budget plan, Obama's, didn't get a single vote. Not even a member of his own party voted for his plan. And recently, the idiot president told more Americans and even Africans to kiss his ass. How did he do that? Obama invited a dictator who has stolen billions from his impoverished African nation to visit. And they're sitting in the White House yucking it up. If George W. Bush had brought an African strongman, a dictator, into the White House, who had stolen billions from his own countrymen, left them starving, and is seen sitting close together, holding hands, kissing, and yucking it up, would you think that George W. Bush was a moron? Barack Obama has come under fire for extending a formal invitation to a shamed African dictator who has ruthlessly plundered billions of dollars from his own country. The U.S. president had a coveted private meeting with President Ali Bongo of Gabon in the Oval Office. Despite his appalling track record as a leader, Bongo's family has ruled the impoverished African nation with an iron fist for 5 decades and have used its oil riches to fund a life of outrageous luxury. Meanwhile, 1/3 of the people in Gabon live on less than $2 a day, and thousands starve to death each year or are forced to pick through garbage to find food. Now, critics have pointed out that Gabon, with a population of 1.5 million, is the third largest oil producer in sub-Saharan Africa. They claim that the only reason Mr. Obama has agreed to the meeting is that he wants to curry favor with an ally to secure America's fuel supplies, regardless of who's in it. But where? Why? Is there no honor to this president? Not a single shred of honor or decency? The Bongo's family abuses of Gabon is well documented and dates back to 1967 when Omar Bongo, Ali's father, took over. Now, 2 years ago, the elder Bongo died, paving the way for Ali to continue the reign of corruption. And investigations have revealed that Bongos have dozens of luxury homes in places like the French Riviera and a 120 million 14-bedroom townhouse in Paris. During one shopping spree in 2006, Ali Bongo's then-wife balked at the idea of moving into a property that cost us a mere pittance, $25 million. She said, I need something really big, really, really big. Inge said, that was her name, that's her name, Inge. I would think that for that amount of money, I would expect a bit more grandeur, she said. She said, I've tried to downsize, but it's just not in my character. Really? Even Jack Bloom, a United Nations consultant and expert on offshore banking, told ABC News that the meeting with Mr. Obama sends out the wrong message. Who is handling this moronic president? Who is advising this idiot president of ours? And Bloom went on to say that over the years, the bongos have siphoned off a quarter of Gibbons' GDP, which has made them incredibly rich. There's absolutely no shame, Bloom said of Bongo and his cronies. I would say that the people who are running the country are guilty of grand theft nation. Senator Carl Levine, Democrat from Michigan, added that Omar Bongo is now... His son, Ali Bongo, have more than 40 years run a regime in Gibbon which diverts their country's wealth for their family's personal use. Our president of the United States has met with this man. I have a picture right here in front of me of the two sitting together, yucking it up as if they're old buddies from high school. Speaking to ABC News, the White House press secretary, press idiot, Jay Carney admitted that Bongo has a less than sterling record. Oh, my goodness. Wow. Really? First of all, the president of Gibbon is making reform efforts, which he supports. Reform efforts. How about giving up all that jack you stole and giving it to the people who are eating out of the garbage cans? What sort of reforms? Carney, you moron. Carney is an idiot. The whole administration are a bunch of morons. They all need to go. We need a serious house cleaning in the White House right now. And then after all those idiots are gone, we need to scrub that place down and send in an exterminator. Not that kind of exterminator, the one that gets rid of the bugs. I don't want to hear from the Secret Service again. A spokesman for Bongo claimed that the president is a reformer, but could not explain how he built such fantastic wealth. So this guy who has his his countrymen eating out of the trash and making less than $2 a day is a reformer. Yeah, I have heard that too, American Citizen. American Citizen writes that there is a rumor floating around that Hillary Clinton is a lesbian and that her lover is the wife of Anthony Weiner. I'm not surprised. We've been hearing rumors and whispers that Hillary is a lesbo for decades now. Not that there's anything wrong with that. It's been given that the reason why she stays with Bill Clinton is because she knows and he knows that she's not giving it up, and he's got to get it from somewhere. But those are just silly rumors. And I don't want to perpetuate such things, because I am a class act. Oh, my goodness. It isn't hard to see right now, because we're going to shift gears right now for the remaining few minutes of the show. Who wouldn't be after marrying Bill? Egypt. Libya. Yemen. Bahrain. Syria. Saudi Arabia. Tunisia. Al-Qaeda. And the Muslim Brotherhood. Its moderate cousin. Are on the verge of a stunning strategic victory in the Middle East. National interests are on the precipice of suffering the worst setback since the Chinese communist seized the world's most populous nation in 1949. It isn't hard to see that our great, illustrious, God Almighty President has nearly lost the Middle East. In 2008, America was wrapping up its successful surge in Iraq. Al-Qaeda was a spent force, unable to mount any successful attacks on U.S. soil since 9/11. A candidate, Barack Obama, opposed the surge, claiming with the anti-war left that the only morally just war was in Afghanistan, a theater which, the narrative went, had gotten the short shift due to the unneeded war in Iraq. Obama assumed the presidency in 2009, claiming a new beginning in foreign relationships, pushing the reset button with U.S. rivals and enemies such as Russia and Islamic Republic of Iran, as well as entire peoples, whose was his intent with his famous Cairo speech to the Muslim world on June 4, 2009. In retrospect, Obama's Cairo speech will be seen as the catalyst that handed Islamics the legitimizing victory that decades of terrorism and political maneuvering failed to spark. The only question is, which brand of Islam will prevail? The impatient, hyper-violent Al-Qaeda or the moderate Muslim Brotherhood? Everything that this guy touches, everything that Obama touches, turns to crap. The guy is the worst president on the face of this here planet. He is worse than Jimmy Carter. I kid you not. Immature, incompetent, arrogant. We trust this guy with the nuclear launch codes. A complete and utter failure as President of the United States. What are we going to do? My goodness. The next civil war is coming. Brother, can you spare a dime? That's what we're all going to be doing. Pretty soon, we're pretty much done, folks. How are we going to right this ship? How are we going to fix this problem? Does anybody have any ideas? Does anybody really know what time it is? Does anybody really care? Well, there is hope. There is hope. Yes, Democrats are employing the president to to start doing his job and looking after America's interest. Political pundits, writers, publishers are saying that our president is incompetent, that he has no idea what he's doing. Finally, America is starting to get it. Finally. So I feel good. I feel good. More like, brother, can you spare? That's a lot of dime. Richard Martin writes in the chat room. Thank you, Richard, for contributing. I do appreciate it. I'll tell you what, folks. I feel like there's some hope now. Finally, not everybody's kissing this guy's butt anymore. It's like the story I learned as a child, where the emperor has no clothes. Finally, it's been revealed that the emperor is indeed buck naked. I want to thank you all for being here. Those folks who are listening as guests, Karen Hunter, Richard Martin, American Citizen, thank you for taking time out of your busy day today to come and listen to this show and contribute. I do appreciate it. Everyone who comes in at any time, whether it's Tesla, Cougar, GGT, Southern Sense, everybody, thank you for contributing to this show. I hope everybody has a really great weekend. I'm cutting out a little early tonight. Got a few things I need to take care of. But I appreciate you being here. I really do. Life is good. And we're going to close out the show with Al Jolson. Oh, yeah, that guy. And brother, can you spare a dime? Because I tell you what, this song is very moving to me. I know some people will laugh, but it really is. Thank you, AC. Thank you, Karen. I'll be talking to you a little bit later. And Richard, thank you. Everybody, have a wonderful night and have a great weekend. Thank you, thank you, thank you.
They used to tell me I was building a dream, and so I followed the mob. When there was earth to plow or guns to bear, I was always there, right on the job. They used to tell me I was building a dream, with peace and glory ahead. Why should I be standing in line, just waiting for bread? Once I built a railroad, made it run, made it race against time. Once I built a railroad, now it's done. Brother, can you spare a dime? Once I built a tower to the sun, brick, mortar, and lime. Once I built a tower, now it's done. Brother, can you spare a dime? Once in khaki suits, he will look swell, full of that Yankee doodle-dum. Half a million boots went marching through hell, and I was the kid with a drum. Hey, don't you remember? They called me Al. It was Al, Al all the time. Hey, don't you remember? I'm your pal. Brother, can you spare a dime? Once I built a railroad, I made it run, and I made it race against time. Once I built a railroad, now it's done. Hey, brother, ain't got a dime about you, have you? And once I built a tower, yes, a tower to the sun, of brick, mortar, and lime. Yes, I'm the fella built the tower, and now it's done. Hey, buddy, ain't got a dime about you, have you? Once in khaki suits, he will swell full of that Yankee doodle-dee-dum. Half a million boots went marching through hell, and I was a kid with a drum. Say, don't you remember? Don't you remember they called me Al? It was Al, Al all the time. Don't you remember? I'm your pal. Brother, can you